From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, June 9th, 2017. And on this day, the investigation deepens into the funding behind the campaign for a casino referendum in Maine, and climate change, safety, and commercial fisheries in New England. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
First tonight, the Maine Ethics Commission today voted to launch an investigation into the funding sources of a ballot campaign to build a casino in York County. The commission wants to determine whether the campaign properly disclosed its funders. As Steve Missler reports, attorneys for the corporations backing the campaign say they're not hiding anything, but they also appear to be ready to fight the investigation.
Up until last month, finance reports for the Horse Racing Jobs Fairness campaign show that over $4.3 million in funding has come from a single source, Miami resident Lisa Scott. But the campaign was forced to update its funding sources last month in response to press reports, inquiries from state lawmakers, and the Ethics Commission. The new reports show that Scott had received funds from a web of corporations, including one company based in Japan and another in Las Vegas. At least one of those companies has ties to Scott's brother, Sean Scott, a casino developer with a checkered past. Attorney Bruce Merrill, representing the ballot campaign, told the commission that his client was not aware that it was supposed to disclose the sources over a year ago. Commissioner Richard Nass, however, was skeptical.
Yeah, what you do know is that the voters of Maine have a right to know where the money is coming from, and you've made that particularly difficult here by having these multiple sources and bank accounts, and if it's all Lisa Scott, you know, it should be easily related to Lisa Scott, and it's not. It's all over the place here.
Merrill insists that the pass-through entities weren't designed to hide anything, and that the reason they weren't disclosed originally, he says, has to do with ambiguity in Maine law. Nass didn't buy it.
That's a problem in the way the statute is
written
now.
No, that's smoke and mirrors. It's not.
Will you show me somewhere in these statutes where we have to disclose original source? It isn't there.
The commission also questioned the nature of money transfers to Lisa Scott, and ultimately, to the Horse Racing Jobs Fairness campaign. Merrill described the transfers as non-refundable loans, and he also suggested that Scott would not have to repay the loans if the ballot question failed, and that she would financially benefit if it passed. Attorneys for the campaign indicated that they would cooperate with the investigation, but Merrill refused to accept the commission's subpoena for records immediately after the meeting. The investigation into whether the campaign filings were late is expected to be completed quickly, but the probe into the network of finances could take longer, especially if the campaign and its funders refuse to cooperate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Scientists and fishing industry reps from a dozen countries have been in Portland this week for the 11th annual conference and workshop on lobster biology and management. This morning's keynote address was delivered by Rutgers University ecologist and evolutionary biologist Malin Pinsky. His talk, Ocean Animals on the Move, dealt with something observers have been noticing for the last several years. Things seem to be changing faster in the oceans than on land. I spoke via Skype with Pinsky, who notes that marine species are moving as the ocean gets warmer and more acidic.
We're seeing a transformation in where species are found in the waters all over the world, but also right here off the coast of Maine. As temperatures are heating up, and they're actually heating up at about twice the global rate here in the Gulf of Maine, we're seeing new species show up that actually haven't been here traditionally, species like black sea bass and certain species of squid, as well as other species that just can't tolerate the new warmer temperatures, species like Atlantic cod, which has been such a staple of the fishing industry over hundreds of years, though not as much recently. It's actually, in many cases, getting too hot for cod in parts of the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank.
Now, you say that the American lobster is one of the clearest examples of species that are on the move.
We've seen very dramatic changes in American lobster in particular. So there's an example close to where I work down in New Jersey. There was quite a strong lobster fishery in Long Island Sound up through the 1990s, but after a series of very hot summers, that fishery crashed and really isn't expected to come back because Long Island Sound has heated up so much. But actually, we're in Maine seeing in some cases what may be sort of the other end of that. It's traditionally been a little bit too cold for lobster in eastern Maine. It's warmed up a little bit and may actually be closer to that ideal range of temperatures for lobster settlement in particular. And the fishery has been doing quite well, actually, in eastern Maine.
Lobster is a big part of Maine's economy. Fisheries are a big part of many of the economies in this area. How would you predict this is likely to affect us here in Maine and around the region economically?
The coastal economy in Maine not only relies on tourism, but also really has a foundation in fisheries and lobster in particular, and really relies on that lobster industry. So there's a lot of concern that if lobsters don't tolerate increasing temperatures well, that it really threatens the entire economy up and down the coast.
Given what's happening with climate change and ocean ecology, what are the best and worst case scenarios in this part of the world?
The best case scenario is that, yes, we do lose some species that have traditionally been very important for the ecosystem and for fisheries and coastal economies in Maine. Species like cod, for example, may not support very strong fisheries in the future, at least in the Gulf of Maine. The best case scenario is that they get replaced by other species moving in from further south, and that our fisheries, both technologically as well as from the perspective of regulations and economic systems, can adapt and exploit these new species, and the ecosystems can adjust. I think the scary worst case scenario, though, is that we get extinctions without equivalent colonizations, and that we lose species and just end up with relatively empty oceans, that species aren't able to colonize new habitats. And to me, at least, that's a really scary vision.
Malin Pinsky, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally today, climate change may be changing commercial fishing in New England, but commercial fishermen in our region already face their fair share of challenges. Along with declining stocks, tight catch regulations, and competition from cheap imports, the occupation itself is still one of the most dangerous in the country. With that ever-present risk in mind, dozens of fishermen turned out in Newcastle, New Hampshire recently for a day-long safety training event. NHPR's Todd Bookman reports.
These commercial fishermen, they take a risk every time they set off from shore.
Yeah, I've been on boats at sunk, had to get overboard and had to get in my survival suit and but gone in the water in the wintertime. And so I've been through it, and yeah.
John Emerton is a fourth-generation fisherman.
It's pretty hairy-carry when you have to deal with it with reality. Never happens when it's nice like today.
Emerton gill nets off of the Angela Michelle, usually found out in the Gulf of Maine. Today, though, he and his crew are on dry land. They're in Newcastle for a free safety event put on by the nonprofit Fishing Partnership Support Services. Training director Ed Dennehy says when you're miles off the coast, fishermen need to know how to handle situations.
And when you're out in the ocean, you're your only person around to save yourself. There's no ambulance, there's no fire engine. So you need to know how to address those kinds of issues.
Yes, boats are subject to routine inspections. The Coast Guard makes sure there are flares and life rafts aboard. But there's no one checking on if crew knows how to use that equipment properly. And so for a couple of hours under a warm sun, 56 men and women, including staff from research vessels, they get to run drills in a controlled setting.
You don't want to pull it up just up to your forehead. You want to pull it down lower, because what happens is that moves the zipper down lower, so it's not up in your face.
Out on the pier, instructors are giving tips on how to quickly slip into immersion suits. These are brightly colored full-body outfits that protect against hypothermia and drowning.
So if you lean back a little bit like this, it helps burp air out of your suit, and you get a running start on the zipper, just try and get it.
After snaking into them, the fishermen complete the experience by jumping off a dock. In another area, there's a session on how to deploy a life raft. and a demonstration for the proper time and way to shoot off flares.
We recommend you shoot off one rocket when you abandon ship, and after that, save your active signaling equipment until you see somebody to signal.
Thick orange smoke swirls in the wind. 100 or so yards away, it's black smoke from a small contained fire. Everybody practices using a fire extinguisher, and then it's a break for lunch, where they sit around swapping stories.
I am Mike Walden. I'm a commercial fisherman from Kittery Point, Maine.
And what do you usually go after?
Tuna fish and lobster.
Waldron says no matter what, trouble on the water will happen, and it won't always end well.
Me and my wife have recovered two or three people after they were lost at sea, and we brought them home for the burial for the families. But it's part of what we do. You know, I think we're kind of desensitized to it. Every fisherman has a friend or a relative that's died out there usually.
For both weathered veterans and the younger fishermen, it's those unforgettable experiences that drive interest in events like these. Again, Ed Dennehy with the Fishing Partnership.
Just based on the turnout we're getting at our trainings, the whole idea of safety is now starting to catch on a lot more. And we're slowly but surely changing the culture.
This is the first time the training has been held in New Hampshire. Dennehy says they hope to be back in future years. I'm Todd Bookman.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, June 9th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.